Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. I want to thank you all for being here tonight. This is Brain Injury Awareness Month, and have had, will be having some really phenomenal guests this month and topics like tonight's, where we are really going to be painting a broad brush. I've said before that I find it interesting that everybody knows someone or something about cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and depending on where you look, but the last place I looked, there's 3.6 million brain injuries a year. Now, that's a lot, and yet I'm surprised. My original one happened in 1995. I've been on the radio for 12 years. I'm surprised at how little is known by the general public. A lot of us survivors ourselves and in the traditional medical model. Things have gotten better, but as usual, never as quickly as we'd like them to be. Did I say I'm your host, Kim Justice? When I switch up the intro in the beginning on my co-host night, I'm not always sure, but I'm your regular Wednesday host. Tonight is always special, as is my last Wednesday of each month, because I have a couple of great co-hosts. And tonight, the second Wednesday of each month, is Karen Robinson. For more on Karen, you can check out her website, great resources and blogs at hopetbi.com. And if you want to know more about me, you can check out my website, inaflash.org. Karen and I are going to be discussing peer pressure as a causal factor for brain injury. Whether it's a gang or a frat house, sports, social media challenges, and more, young people have been experiencing even more debilitating and deadly brain injuries. These injuries level the playing field because regardless of race, finances, religion, sex, brain injury doesn't discriminate. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month, and this topic is one seldom discussed. This is unfortunate because most of these injuries are preventable. Glad you're here to join us. I'm a little scrambled tonight. A couple of things have happened, and one of the things that we're going to talk about, a number of things in this topic of peer pressure, is I mentioned that a lot of these injuries are preventable in this particular category. And I was just thinking about a couple of people, a brain injury survivor, friend of the network, has been a guest. A lot of you have heard me talk about Minnesota Matt. You've heard him talk on the show. And he was in a horrible accident February 20th. He was snowmobiling up there in Minnesota, and a truck ran over him, and he has quite extensive injuries. He was airlifted to a hospital in a coma for a couple days, and collapsed lungs, turned into pneumonia, broken arm, problems with back, neck, head. And I won't go into his story. I'll let him come when he's feeling better. But just some thoughts and prayers to go out to him, if you're so inclined. And also on my mind today, not brain related, but my cousin's precious little four-year-old, Paisley, had to go through, she was born with a hole in her heart. And again, I won't go through the rest of her story, but she had open heart surgery this morning and even was on a bypass machine for a while. So again, if you're so inclined, thoughts and prayers out to her. Now, these couple things I was just talking about, and another couple I'll leave for another day, are things, and mine, you know, my brain injury, Karen's brain injury, these weren't preventable, meaning we didn't ask for it or do anything to make it happen. We were just living our lives, and as my tag says, in a flash, our life changed forever. A lot of the things we're going to talk about tonight are preventable. And so I hope you'll listen in, and we'll have some good takeaways. I want to back up for just a minute, because what I forgot to do for newcomers who are here is to give you the general thrust of what my shows track on every Wednesday night. This show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests and co-hosts share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program, because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. And with that, I'm going to bring on my fellow warrior, Karen Robinson. Karen, how are you doing tonight?
You know what? I'm doing pretty good. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. I thought I was having a bad day the couple days ago, and then the things that I just mentioned came more clearly into focus, and realized that, well, everything is relative to your own base of experience, but I really don't have it so bad. It's just cold, and the barometric pressure brings out my war wounds, I guess. So not happy with that, but really pleased that we had very spring-like weather for maybe a couple weeks. That was really good. And officially, winter's not over yet. Do remember, though, folks, and Karen, maybe you can help me, maybe not. I get this wrong all the time. But it's this Saturday night that you change your clocks. Daylight savings time is going to end. I know the old saying is spring ahead.
Spring forward.
But
fall back.
Forward. Okay, so if it's 7 o'clock where you are on Sunday, it will be what time, Karen, when the clocks have changed?
8 o'clock.
Great. All right. So everybody's
got
that.
So you move forward 1 hour.
You know, but forward has always meant to me, if I use that example, let me screw everybody up now who's got a brain injury. If it was 7 o'clock and you move forward, 6 o'clock is ahead of 7 o'clock. So I'd be going the wrong direction. And for some reason, I'm, you know, very long in the tooth. You would think that I would get it. This is like a math problem to me, if that gives you a clue. So thank God I remembered the clock change.
Like,
and, that you,
and to
and
me,
that
like,
here. Go on.
Saying forward just means the next number after that one. Or saying fall back to me means before the number represented.
Okay, wait. I want to forget the second part of what you said and try to link to the first part of what you said. Say that again, just the first part, and drop the second part to fall.
Okay. So going forward to me means going to the next number, right after
okay.
the number you're on.
Okay. Everybody marinate on that for a second. I can't be the only one in the world with that problem. So marinate on that for just a second, as I'm going to, because one of the compensatory strategies we learn, not all of us use them, but one that's been effective for me, if I can remember the link when the time comes, but I'm pretty good at it, if I can link it to something like that, then I'm always going to have the answer, you know, or link it to some links. Anything that I'm trying to remember to something super familiar, then even if it doesn't click right away, when I focus on it for a little bit, you know, and the things wind up popping into your head 10 minutes later, but all of a sudden, da-da, it's there in your head. Those are things that I've linked. You know, other things are completely lost to me unless I go look it up. So I appreciate that. I may actually remember. So anyway, that's this Saturday night. You might want to mark it down in your calendar. I always do it before I go to bed, just because when I'm up in the morning, it's the new right time. And then it's not officially spring. And I'm sorry, I can't give you the exact date on that. It's like March 21st or 23rd or something like that. So we got another little bit of time that we're officially in winter. And where I live, it feels like it. So we're having our last blast of winter. Got a couple inches of snow yesterday and 2 to 4 tonight going into tomorrow, and went from 50 and 60 degree temperatures, the high, you know, which lasts an hour, but I mean nice temperatures, the last couple weeks, to dropping down last Friday and through this entire week into this coming weekend into like highs in the 30s and lows in the 18 to 23 range, you know, highs in the 30, 35 range and windy. So, surprise, back to winter. But anyway, I'm glad to be here tonight, and glad that Karen thought of this topic. This month, as I'm going through the sequence of shows, we're going to talk about just about every aspect of brain injury and how they happen and details around that. But peer pressure is something that you don't often here used in conjunction with brain injury, but when we got to talking, we thought of a number of different instances where peer pressure causes, most of the time, young people, but when I talk to you later, I'm going to let Karen talk about some things first, but later when I talk about social media and something that they have called a challenge, I was appalled, and I'll give you some sourcing and you can hear what I have to say and look it up yourself, but there's actually adults that do this stuff. And hate to alienate anyone too early, but the way that they couched these things were that influencers, they call them influencers, that do these challenges. And that, like, made me want to dry heave. I mean, influencing people to be reckless morons, I'm sorry, I can't help it. When you hear some of these, some of them are tragic, tragic. And some of them are just nuts. And millions of people are watching these. But anyway, I'll talk more about that later. I do want to say one thing, and then Karen, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you start with whatever aspect of the peer pressure you'd like to talk about. But I do want to say something, because I'm offended and I can't say it there or I would be kicked off. But when I just talked about that precious little girl's surgery, you know, my family is on Facebook, and her parents, who each have an account, mentioned it last night about their feelings about this morning. And my uncle and aunt, the parents of the father, each have an account. They mentioned something. He has two brothers. They mentioned something. And on Facebook yesterday, all I did, some of you might notice, I did a cluster of pictures lately, but before that, for the last several months, I've been on Facebook like once a week. I've really cut back my usage a lot on social media. And so I was on, and there was no question what this is about, and I just wanted to mention it for what it's worth. I wished a couple people happy birthday, because that shows up. Certainly that's not offensive. I didn't talk about politics or anything at all. Most any of you who watch my page see that I post warm fuzzies. You know, I post photos. So nothing like that. I'm not in any groups where I'm kibitzing about politics or anything like that. And so it was really weird last night when on each of those family members, 2, 4, 6 posts, one right after another, where I made reference to either you're in my thoughts and prayers, or she's in God's hands and he'll guide the surgeon's hands, praying for you, thinking of you. I used references to praying in God 6 times on 6 family members' pages about that particular topic. And all of a sudden a thing popped up on Facebook and said that I had crossed the threshold of the amount of times you can post on a particular restricted topic due to their community standards. My mouth about hit the floor on that. Obviously, I was really angry. Obviously, they're secular. I've talked about the censorship for a long time. You know, but my God, whether you believe in God or not, I don't care. I'm not offended. But if you're, you know, if your family member, your friend is going through something like that or a hard time, and you give them, you know, I'm praying for you, or make a comment about in God's hands, they actually have a rule somewhere in their community standards that says there's a limit on the amount of comments you can make in a certain time period about that subject. And needless to say, I'm really insulted. They're needlessly, obviously secular. Fine. I'll never have a prayer for Zuckerberg. But in any case, we all know that people have gotten the boot and gotten sanctioned from talking politics, but apparently religion, which it isn't even religion, you know, I don't have a I don't have a particular religion. I'm a spiritual person, and I believe in a power greater than myself, who I choose to call God. And they have a problem with that as bad as if you were kibitzing about politics. And I find it highly offensive. So whatever you do, if you've got a family member that's having problems or someone has died or anything like that where you might be inclined to have some kind of a spiritually tainted comment to make, they didn't kick me off, but for some amount of time, and frankly, I was ready to throw my phone and I didn't have on my glasses, but for some amount of time, they didn't kick me off, but I'm not allowed to post. So if you see me liking, I think I'm able to like or whatever, care, whatever, those kind of things, but I'm not allowed to post for some amount of time now because of that particular infraction. So I just wanted you to be aware so you don't wind up being censored by being, I found out a new community standard, that's all, and I thought I would pass it on and say how disgusting I think that is. I wasn't on a pulpit. I was talking to family members. So obviously their friends were probably not going to be offended by my comments, if you know what I mean. You know, you usually like similar people, and others wouldn't find it surprising or offensive that you would say something like that under those circumstances. And again, there's no way it could have been anything else. All I did is wish a couple people happy birthday and answered a couple people who commented on my pictures. Thanks so much. You know, benign stuff. So that's the only thing it could have been. Anyway, I'm finished with that now, but I had to say it out loud because this whole movement of censorship, and if you're not in line in one lane, things like this can happen, is really wearing thin on me. If I have to tolerate it out of somebody in another lane, then the door swings both ways, or it doesn't, one way or another. So I really hope that these people get broken up and all of the things that they're talking about doing. All I can do is believe in karma with all my heart that they'll get this all back. So anyway, Karen, on to peer pressure. And I'll talk about social media in a different context and a different not Facebook, but a different form of social media later, that heavy-duty peer pressure thing they got going. But in the meantime, what did you find out when you were looking up peer pressure? If you've got any comment on what I had to say, that's fine. If not, you can just start out with the topic. And I'm happy you're here.
Thanks, Kim. Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting because you and I were batting around different ideas around this peer pressure and brain injury and how it can influence folks acquiring a brain injury or getting a traumatic brain injury. And, you know, one of the things that came to our mind was whenever we think of, you know, like hazing, whether that's hazing in a gang for when they are joining and they're kicking in or hitting in. And then there's also hazing in fraternities and sororities. There's even hazing in high school with freshmen. And in some schools, even with throughout their sports events and sports teams in the locker rooms. And some of those hazing events or initiation processes involve some pretty crazy things. And there's actually been a lot of lawsuits filed by parents or by family members for relatives who have been the victim of a hazing gone wrong that involved a person either getting a traumatic brain injury from the hazing event or participating in, for example, drinking too much alcohol and then falling and hitting their head. And then no one in the sorority or fraternity calling 911 because they don't want anyone to know what happened. And then that person ends up dying from a hemorrhage that could have been circumvented if they got proper medical attention. You know, and but there's so many things that can happen as a result of peer pressure. And not just peer pressure, but relationships in general. Even in healthy relationships, there can be things that take place that can unintentionally cause a brain injury. For example, when we think about relationships with couples who are into some alternative sexual experiences where they may be participating in erotic asphyxiation or breath play, for example. And those things we can talk about throughout the course of the evening too, but those are different things that where if someone's breath is cut off for too long, you know, they can go into a respiratory arrest and they can suffer brain damage. And just we're talking about, I know that we're talking about a lot of different social media things, which I know you'll be discussing as well, and TikTok challenges and Facebook challenges and just different challenges where, you know, I was looking at some of those too, and I just couldn't believe it. One that I thought was really interesting and poignant related specifically to gangs was that there's a specific initiation done where they do something called pumpkin head. And the goal is for them, when they're getting jumped into the gang or initiated, then they literally, purposefully beat the person in the head over and over to try and get their brain to swell on purpose. And that jumping in process is called nicknamed Pumpkinhead in the gang. And, you know, all anyone has to do is just Google Pumpkinhead, and you'll find a lot of articles about it.
When you mentioned that to me, you said Pumpkinhead, and we went on, you know, like we do, brainstorming ideas, and I never went back and asked you what that was. God, that's horrible.
You know, I just...
Anyway, you made the reference, but I didn't ask you that day, and I was like, oh, my God.
You know, it's fascinating what people do to be accepted and what people do to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves.
Mm.
You know, and it's interesting because when you're looking at different factors regarding hazing, you have to consider that. What does hazing lead to? What does it lead to? What can it lead to? What do brain injuries lead to? What can they lead to? Even from just average, everyday folks, you know, even if you get in a car accident or you experience a fall or a slip and fall, just any way, and it can cause personality changes. And, you know, it's really interesting because when you look at our penal system and our current prison system, which houses more prisoners than any other in the world base, we have this existence that the idea that good people stay out of prison and bad people go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's not always the case. I mean, hopefully bad people can be rehabilitated, but if not, then for the safety of society, they remain in prison. However, some of those folks in prison have a traumatic brain injury that has affected their acting out. Now, I'm not saying that a person that commits a crime should not be held accountable. I'm not saying that at
mm-hmm.
all. However, we do need to take into consideration that a lot of our prison population are undiagnosed and untreated folks with brain injuries, either acquired, traumatic, or even brain tumors that have also not been diagnosed, that have changed their acting out. And worse, neurologists explain those that have traumatic brain injury may not be able to function well in prison, and this may be interpreted by corrections officers as resistance, and that leads to punishment
right.
and penalties when they don't necessarily understand what they're being instructed to do, or they are not really following, you know, the processes of things. And so, you know, that's a whole nother thing when we're talking about peer influences. We're not just talking
mm-hmm.
about peer influences of kids and adults, but in prisons as well. And, you know, there's a lot of violence in the penal system also. So whether you're out in the regular world or you're incarcerated or you're in a gang or a sorority or fraternity, I guess the bottom line is that brain injury can touch your life no matter what class of what level of class that you're in, whether you're poor,
right,
rich, tall, short, fat, skinny, black, white, indigo, violet, doesn't matter. It can touch your life. You know, you could be on vacation and on a ski trip and skiing down the mountain and hit a tree. And in that moment that happens and you hurt your head and you sustain a brain injury, that could be something that is life-changing for you. It could change literally everything about your life. See, maybe
I think Sonny Bono and John Denver did that, didn't they? Both. One or both of them did exactly that and actually died from it. But there was also, was it Natasha? I can't think of her name. She lived through hitting her head in that accident, that ski accident you were talking about, but wound up having a brain bleed later on. And they had suggested she go get looked at because she had a really bad headache, but she said, "I'm fine." You know, she did what a lot of us do, got up and no blood, no broken bones, I must be fine. And of course I'd have a headache from, you know, hitting my head on a tree while I'm skiing or whatever in some of these hazing events or just any event. And I'm not suggesting that you run to the doctor every time you tap your head, but sometimes, if it's really an uncharacteristically bad headache, it's not a bad idea. I won't belabor it, but we went over that with the show with Simon, that with about Bob Saget, that you know, he just went to bed. They didn't find him on the floor where he had his accident, where he hit his head. They found him in bed, so there was some reason why maybe he thought it could be dealt with tomorrow, and a brain bleed resulted in it. So it is something to be taken seriously. And then just a tail on something you said, Karen, and then continue is, you know, there really isn't any definitive way to tell because they haven't tested, but somewhere at some time I read that. And like I said, I can't even substantiate the sourcing for you, but I read once that 65% of the people incarcerated have suffered some type of brain injury. A lot of times it was from being abused as a child or these gang initiation things you're talking about, or maybe they've just had an accident and had this personality change that you're talking about that can often come. I won't comment further except you know, on some of these preventable brain injuries and on some things that you think might not be a deal, but perhaps you should do some follow-up and make sure that somebody has got your six keeping, because we don't always know when we've had a brain injury. One of the things is a lot of times we're kind of in a brain fog and we're not thinking clearly, where it would be clear to somebody who knew us, who was around us or watching us, that there had been a change, you know, something that needs to be addressed. And that's a good idea, because it can not only maybe keep us from dying from that event, but from going on, you know, maybe help us make some different choices in our life moving forward about maybe not doing some things that we might have otherwise done, because we don't want to risk having the consequences of brain injury. And, you know, one of the things, and I'm sorry, I said, and I will go back to you, but because we're here, sports, for example, you know, I'm really excited about next week's guest, Ray Cagliani, who's a professional boxer. And he's going to be on, and you mentioned sports when we were talking, and we'll go back to the frat house and prison and all of that. But I do have, and maybe it's the right one, and this may give you an example. It's a public service announcement that we've had for about 6 years. There's three of them, and there's really no way for me to tell exactly which one it is, but I'm going to play it because it's Brain Injury Awareness Month. If this isn't the right one throughout, I'll play a couple of others. They're really short, but the one I'm thinking of gives a good example of peer pressure. Now, you and I as adults might be able to shrug off this and not consider it to be peer pressure, but if you're a kid, you know, on a junior high or high school team, you might be more susceptible to that peer pressure in your ability to feel accepted. Let me try this
But
one.
Mom, don't but mom me. You heard what the doctor said.
I'm fine. I just got my bell rung. It's not like I blacked out.
You've had headaches, dizzy spells, and you're just not yourself. That's not feeling fine.
Come on, I can't miss the game.
It's still serious, even if you didn't black out. It's better to miss one game than the whole season.
All concussions are serious. Know the warning signs and never let your child return to play before a healthcare professional says it's okay. A message from CDC.
Okay, I'm going to try one more.
Time out! Okay, guys, Summers really had his bell rung and could have a concussion. I'm pulling him out for the game. Rodriguez, you're in for Summers.
Come on, coach. It's just a ding. I'll shake it off.
Yeah, he's tough. Plus, we need to win this to make the playoffs.
Listen, we're a team and we need to look out for each other. Concussions are serious. No game is more important than your health.
Take concussions out of play. If you're a coach, know the warning signs and never let athletes return to play before a healthcare professional says it's okay. A message from CDC.
Now, that coach's voice almost sounded like a caricature in there, but that was one of the examples I was thinking about. You heard the kids in the background, not only the kid who wants to go back in and play the game, but the others, you know, especially if it's a player who helps the team win. You know, that young man was not only self-policing and wanting to go back in to play the sport he loved, but the other people on the team were downplaying and helping gig him on by their comments that it wasn't a big deal. And a lot of times in sports, we're hoping, you know, that's one of the things Ray and I are going to talk about next week, so I'm not going to belabor that either. But these ads were made, like I said, maybe 5 years ago from CDC. And, you know, a problem with this is that it's self-policing. Everything you just heard is self-policing, because you've got a coach who wants to win. His job depends on it. You've got kids who want to play. You know, they love the sport. For whatever reason they got involved, they want to play the sport. And so if they're asked questions like they used to be, and they can answer the questions, then that's that. Later, when they made some changes and said a kid had to see a team doctor and get the nod before they can go back, it's the team doctor. They're paid for by the team. So you've got three factions that are in the game, let's say. And it's not true everywhere. Hopefully all coaches are going to react and do what that one said, regardless. But not all will, for various reasons. And because they want to win, because they want to keep their job, because they're a game away from being in the playoffs or a championship. They don't see what they don't want to see, kind of a thing. And so I'm uncomfortable with that all being a self-policing deal. And so, you know, in sports, and well, you can take it to those other levels, fraternities and that sort of thing. And then I think we're going to need to talk about the bigger picture later in the show after we talk about some of these examples. But in any case, like the ad said, concussions can be extremely serious. And from the time these first came out, there is science now that backs up, and I'll talk about that with Ray next week too, that, you know, people that suffer repeated blows to the head can not only have cognitive changes and behavioral changes like Karen was talking about, but if you think it's hell suffering the after effects of the concussion, you know, there's more fun yet to be had. As you start aging out, a lot of these TBIs can morph into degenerative diseases. Football and CTE is a good example. That's not the only place CTE is found. It's where it was discovered. ALS, Parkinson's, we found that out from Ali and subsequent others. And so there's a lot at stake, and, you know, we'll need to talk about how you can feel good about yourself and be the one that not necessarily says this, but, you know, when you're getting pressure, come on, don't be a wuss, come on, it's nothing, and people are doing that to get you to go. Somehow we've got to get our kids to a place where they don't succumb to that peer pressure to feel accepted. They feel sure enough and confident enough about themselves that the counter, instead of being, oh, okay, and going on and doing it, possibly causing lifelong damage or death, would be to say, forget it. I'm no dummy. I'm not going to go in and take chances like that. Somewhere that's a missing key in peer pressure is an underlying problem of people. A lot of times kids, in the cases we're going to be talking about, but some of those on TikToks, when you hear them, involve adults. And that made me sick. But I guess somehow we have to feel, like I said, strong and confident enough about ourselves. We don't practice risk-taking behavior that can kill us or disable us for life just to feel accepted or to have a certain amount of likes on Facebook or TikTok or YouTube or however they give you numbers, because those people hitting those likes or whatever are invisible people. And when you're no longer an influencer because you've disabled yourself for the rest of your life and people are no longer watching, then that was a shallow way that social media is trying to lead kids into feeling more popular and feeling more accepted and feeling like that, you know, quote unquote, like they're somebody based on this feedback of people watching. One of the other things that really bothered me, and we can, you can say after I say this sentence, if you want to go on to some of the others, but really gang, fraternity, sports, we can talk about the social media earlier as opposed to later if you want, and then talk about, you know, the underlying feelings and what we can do to help feel people feel accepted and not give so much weight to social media, which didn't even exist most of my life. People still wanted to be accepted, so they did things, you know, to had risk-taking behavior to try to be accepted, but it was in smaller groups, you know. Two things bother me about the social media challenges. One is the challenge themselves. The other is the grooming of a generation, both adults, pathetically, but children, to think that it's funny, that it's a funny thing for people to do behavior that can injure them. And I find that extremely bothersome, and my mind flipped back as I was reading some of these today. I found an article that talked about 23. It was talking about the Washington Post banning TikTok, at least that part of TikTok with the challenges, because of some of these things we'll talk about. And it talked about 23 of these challenges. And with all the people watching and people being successful at these things, if you want to call it that, when you hear some of the stories, you'll wonder. But, you know, giving them the crown of being an influencer, the numbers of people that are watching, it reminded me of, you know, and there was a controversy about this, but not to me. You know, back during the video, and it still goes on, but, you know, I remember when Grand Theft Auto came out, there was a lot of things that happened, and there's been a lot of talk through sociology, psychology, and other, and probably prison, that when things like that went a long way to desensitize kids, especially ones that are hooked on it, doing it all the time, that they were going to be more apt to go out and perpetuate violence because they had completely gotten desensitized to it by playing these video games, putting out concepts, killing people, stealing cars, and making that cool. Your parents were standing in line to get the tapes for you to play those things 10 hours a day. And, you know, the downside of that is that it desensitized a lot of kids, adults, perhaps, to the point that they could go out in public with real people and do damage that likely wouldn't have happened before. And that's what this smacks of to me in a different way, but similar dynamic, is when you're grooming millions of people to think something's funny. To me, that's as horrible as the act itself, because it just means that all those people that think it's funny are going to be trying it themselves. They're going to be encouraging others, talk about peer pressure, talking their friends into doing these things. And if you don't think it's funny, then you're going to have pressure on you for not thinking it's funny. And, you know, the thing that bothers me about that is they know it. The grown-ups that create these things know it. And yet, you know, like making Facebook addictive, they spent millions of dollars with the sole purpose of keeping you on as long as possible. Slot machines in the old days, they spent millions of dollars figuring out that a certain kind of metal in the slot machine made a certain kind of noise when coins dropped in it. It was like Pavlov's dog. People who had a tendency toward a gambling addiction, or who would sit there on a slot machine for 10 hours, salivated and chained themselves to the slot machine when they heard that sound. They spent money to do science to come up with that. Facebook did that. That's well documented. And TikTok as well. And so, you know, there's people putting money on this, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not on Facebook as often anymore. I decided who's going to be in charge here. Is it going to be them driving me or me driving them? I've told people a long time ago I don't have notifiers. I just go on once or twice a day and check and see if I have any messages or anything like that, and check and see how my family's doing. Heaven forbid that I said something to them last night. But, you know, I do like to see my friends and family on there, but, you know, I don't play games on there, and I don't stay on there, and I never, ever, ever buy anything off of there. I would encourage you, if you see ads on social media, to go directly to the vendor and not to buy it through social media. You're cutting out a middleman to share your private information with by just going directly to the vendor and making your purchase instead of giving your credit card out through social media. I just wouldn't buy anything. Anyway, we can go on. I can read you a couple challenges, or if there's something else you want to, some other aspect you want to hit on, we can do that too. However you want to go.
I definitely have a few more things to cover in that
Great.
Same genre there about the penal system. You know, it's interesting because many people in prisons and jails are living with traumatic brain injury. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't want to talk about our penal system. They don't want to talk about people that are put behind bars. You know, but we've come to a conversation right now in our society where in recent years we've seen an increase in talk about restorative justice and the psychological effects of, for example, solitary confinement, and even the inhumanity of the things that we've become more aware of recently, which is the private immigrant prisons, for example. But what you don't hear about is the prevalence of traumatic brain injury effects on the prisoners. Now, a lot of the prisoners come in with traumatic brain injuries, and those that don't acquire they acquire traumatic brain injuries while they're in prison or in custody, whether that be from law enforcement or other prisoners. And then they're left to just live with whatever they're dealt. And, you know, it's we're talking about different demographic experiences. And there's a doctor, a neurologist. Her name is Dr. Kim Gorgans. And she did a TEDx Mile High talk. So if you're interested in watching her video, you just look her up. It's Kim, G-O-R-G-E-N-S. And she exposed a really shocking statistic. And that's 50 to 80% of people in the criminal justice system have a traumatic brain injury that is not being treated or not recognized. And now this is in comparison to less than 5% who have a traumatic brain injury in the general public. And for women inmates, it's even worse. Almost every single woman, Kim said, in the criminal justice system has been exposed to interpersonal violence and abuse. And more than half of these women have been exposed to repeated brain injuries through domestic violence. Now, to clarify, Dr. Gorgans points out that these are not just casual injuries. These are the kinds of injuries that they're sustaining that require them to be hospitalized. And it makes their brains resemble those of retired NFL players.
Right.
You know, so they experience the same risks of developing dementia, developing dementing diseases as the players who acquire CTE. What it also means is that it makes it difficult for the inmates to do something that we all take for granted. Well, all of those people without a brain injury, I should say, and that's to think and to process instructions easily, to keep track of things, to memorize. Those are all things that are affected by a brain injury. And traumatic brain injury effects on inmates are substantial. That's a survival environment. That's an environment where you have to be aware and thinking constantly. And if you have a brain injury, that makes your everyday life that much more difficult. And it can make it more difficult to process information, make good decisions, you know, showing up on the right dates for court appearances. You know, it makes it look like they make poor judgment, poor impulse control, all the things you see right along with a brain injury, but they're just looked as someone that's not cooperative, and that is trouble. And that brings me to the next thing I wanted to discuss about prison and jails, is that you asked me what I had learned about in looking, you know, researching this a little bit. I learned that in Washington State, there's a correction center called Stafford Creek Correction Center. And they are running a pilot or started running a pilot program back in 2020, I believe it was, that does screening specifically for traumatic brain injury of all their prisoners and all their incoming prisoners. And then the idea is to provide care and therapies and ongoing intervention for those that tested with significant symptoms or symptoms from having the traumatic brain injury. So I thought that was a unique program that I hadn't heard of before, and I thought it would be interesting to see how that plays out into our restorative justice program throughout society as time goes on. And
there will be increments, you know, from there. I wonder if he knows about it.
Oh,
I mean, that's where
he
happens
to.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up. I'll have to ask him.
You know, when we look at prisoners that have had head injuries, they may have also experienced other things right along with that, and that's mental health problems, maybe severe depression, anxiety. A lot of them have substance use disorders. They may have, you know, a lot of them have difficulty controlling anger or have suicidal ideation or thoughts and or attempted suicide. And, you know, and so a lot of these are really common effects or after effects, rather, of sustaining a brain injury. You know, and then for the average person out here that's not incarcerated who experiences a brain injury, they run the risk of a higher probability of committing a crime because of those, or a violent crime because of those impulse control issues that I was just mentioning. So making sure that we have more research around brain injury, making sure that we have equal amounts of research, not just on male brains, but female brains, because we've shown that there's a preponderance of difference in the recovery rate and the symptomology between males and females, and the majority of research right now being done is only on male brains. Now, there is a group out there called Pink Concussions.
Yes, familiar.
Wonderful group. And women can actually donate their brains for research after they die, and that research can be used to help develop treatment plans for future generations and women, you know, as our science and research develops over time. So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to mention was with the Department of Corrections in Washington State, with the Stafford Creek Correction Center, is if you take time to Google that, I know that they had some studies up and some different statistics that were available that they've been presenting over the last couple years. Now, when we talk about peer pressure, right, how does peer pressure play into that, and what does that have to do with prison? Well, sometimes our peers can influence us as human beings to do things that we may not do normally. Sometimes a person may be born into a certain lifestyle where one generation has led to another generation of doing the same kind of lifestyle living. And one of those things is like hazing, okay? Hazing is a tradition in some colleges. It's tradition for some families. Military hazing, we hear about that as well. It's not just limited to gangs and clubs and fraternities and sororities. It's quite a common thing that happens, and people die sometimes in those hazing initiations. Now, if anyone you know is experiencing hazing trauma, or you know of any organization that is doing illegal hazing, there is a way to report that hazing anonymously. There's something called hazingprevention.org. That's hazingprevention.org. And you can report anonymously to that organization or to fill out a thing online. It's all virtual. And they have a step-by-step process of how you can report the hazing, and they give a step-by-step process exactly what they do to address the hazing that you're reporting. So if you have any interest in reporting any kind of hazing, you can contact them. They also have a hotline that's available 24 hours a day, and it's 1-888 not haze. So that's 1-888-668-4293. And again, they accept calls 24 hours a day. When we're talking about hazing, we're not just talking about gang initiations or club initiations. We're talking about a lifestyle change that can impact someone for their entire life, all on the merit of trying to fit in and participate in something that is not safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, so I was just waiting.
No, you're okay.
If you were at a period at the end of your sentence. Yeah, so when I randomly said that 65%, the spread that Kim gave in her talk, that close to the middle, so I think that's pretty accurate, even though I couldn't source it. Whatever I read that said 65% with that TED talk, her statistics, that was a pretty wide spread, but that number puts it right in between. So I think that can be a given, that a lot of people in prison have suffered from brain injury. Now, why some act out to the extent that they wind up in prison and others don't, I don't know. But I think that's a great thing that they're doing in Washington State. And Craig's real involved with brain injury programs of all kinds in the state of Washington. He's got an organization called People First, and they do a lot of things. That's why I'm curious. We don't talk that often. I haven't had occasion to ask him about this prison study that they're doing, but it would be interesting to hear if he has any involvement in it himself. And you're right, hazing has been, you know, that peer pressure you can even get from your parents, I guess, you know, and some of the, well, no matter what end of the spectrum, if it's the gang or more so, you know, some of these Ivy League colleges, you know, the parent has gone through that dance, and you know, it's not only the peers, but maybe sometimes family members, you know. Well, I was a Phi Beta Kappa, you know, I went through that, you know. I would hope that, you know, when they were older and a successful parent, that you know, they'd understand the risks inherent. One of them that you gave the example of is drinking, and you know, there's been quite a few people, you talked about lawsuits and, you know, that have gotten alcohol poisoning or drank so much alcohol, as you say, that their heart stopped and they ended up not dying but having an anoxic brain injury or lack of oxygen to the brain that caused a brain injury that they've had for the rest of their life, or just plain fallen like drunks do. People who are drunk do, you know, falling and hitting your head on the concrete or on something else. And yeah, there's some rituals that are generational that contribute to that peer pressure. And then you take other kids, a group of others in that subset, and that's going to be some heavy duty peer pressure because they're all generationally tainted. And you put a group of them together,
right,
in a room, and that's not going to be good news at all. And I'll be talking 2 weeks from now, the second half of the show. There's two guests that night, but the second half of the show we'll be talking about TBI and substance abuse, and boy, that's so widely encompassing, the peer pressure part of it. A lot of times it's in front of the brain injury. It's drinking or using being a contributing factor to winding up having a brain injury. And then afterward, when you have the brain injury and you're being treated, a lot of times that's with a drug that winds up becoming an addiction, and that doesn't help the brain injury. It hurts the brain injury and gives people a new problem to deal with. And then there's after the brain injury, many times that people can't accept the new me, or while they're in the confusion period of what direction their life is going to turn when they find out they can't go back to exactly what it was before, self-medicating. And so substance abuse permeates the brain injury community, beginning, middle, or end. And so certainly the upfront part, where there's peer pressure involved, I, again, we'll have to talk. Maybe when we get through the examples we're giving, we can talk a little bit about, and this is one thing I didn't study for this topic, but I think it's really good we raise awareness to the various peer pressure, call attention to it, to have responsible adults, whether they're parents or peers or whoever they are that are surrounding kids. You know, they may be aware that these things go on, but paying a little extra attention. Kids are, you know, it seems like every generation, kids are doing things a little younger than they were the generation before. And you might not be able to imagine an 8-year-old doing some of these social media things I'll tell you about later. You know, you wouldn't picture, you'd think maybe somebody 16, 17, 18 might be doing these, and they are, but so are 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. And so if not banning this sort of thing, which I can't see one redeeming feature of why you wouldn't ban it myself, if not banning it, then, you know, I don't have kids, so I don't know, but I know that there's certain ways parents can block certain things. Being a kind of deviant kid like I was, even though there wasn't social media, I usually found a way around boundaries and rules that my parents put up. So, you know, if you put a block on a kid's phone that they can't get to a couple areas, chances are they'll do it on their iPad instead, or their tablet, or with their friends. And so, you know, to me it'd be good if some of these things just were taken away because they're bad. You know, there's just not a redeeming feature to them. Whether it's even something benign, you know, and I'll talk about some of those, that simply have a kid do something that makes a complete and total ass out of them. Embarrassing, you know, something embarrassing and shameful. And they get a challenge to do that. And all the comments they have to read about themselves are very self-undermining and shaming. And psychologically, that's a bad thing. We know that kids' brains don't fully develop until they're 25. So, you know, things like, you know, depression. A lot of kids have depression and anxiety. It was even before COVID, believe it or not. We've had it so long, hard to imagine. But, you know, just you're at that age where you're trying to gain autonomy, you know, somewhere between being the kid in the house and separating. You're not completely ready to separate from your parents, but you're finding your way to your personal autonomy separate from the family, and that's a very vulnerable time, and also a time where, you know, you're looking for acceptance. and that often involves risk-taking behavior. Something on that last thing, another host sent me today that said, this is off med page, concussions linked to mental health issues in kids. It can be after, it can actually be after even 18 months of an untreated concussion, neuropsychosis can set in. External force examples, car accidents, sports, amusement rides, roller coasters. You know, I didn't think of that when I was riding on them a lot as a kid, but one of the things we've talked about on Brain Injury Radio is how many potential brain injuries we had before we had the brain injury that got our attention. And roller coasters, some of the roller coasters that they've built out there, the G-forces on those, and when you go down and the way you slam is not a lot different than the fall I had out back that gave me a whiplash concussion. You know, it causes your brain to slam against your skull in those G-forces. So falls and more is the end of what that says. But so there's getting to be more evidence that in kids and likely adults that, you know, we've always said depression, anxiety, PTSD, but that other mental health diagnoses can germinate out of brain injuries as well as later on degenerative type diseases. But I'll read just a little bit of what a couple of these I saw about TikTok. And it doesn't really matter, you know, you mentioned that there's challenges on Facebook. I've never known that except one challenge I'll talk about first. Apparently was done on Facebook first. A guy did it. One guy did it on Facebook, and it carried over to TikTok into the challenge category where a lot of people were doing it. I haven't joined TikTok. If it matters to you, and I have nothing against the people anywhere, and I don't like the sharing of information that our American companies, social media companies do, but TikTok is owned by CCP, by the Chinese Communist Party. TikTok is one of the largest social media platforms on the web. The video sharing app has over 1 billion users worldwide, and last year it dethroned Google as the Internet's most visited website domain. That was as of February 17th, 2022. This was a question in the article. Does TikTok share data with China? As CNBC noted last year, TikTok's privacy policy states that the app can share user data with its Chinese parent company, though it claims to employ security measures to, quote-unquote, safeguard sensitive user data. It's another thing I would caution you on is whether it's TikTok or Facebook, they're all sharing your personal information. So everything that you put, you know, you might think private messenger. You might make an assumption that what you're saying in private messenger as opposed to on your page or a comment in a group or something like that. There is no privacy on the Internet, and there is no privacy in social media, and they do sell your information. I don't know if any of you, knew or noticed. I sure have. My husband and I can be talking about something, anything. I need a new sundress, whatever. When I broke my foot, I need to, something that I don't search or whatever, or talk about, you know, when I broke my foot, I was going to be needing some kind of orthopedic type shoes. All of a sudden, the ads on my Facebook were showing ads for supportive shoes. Now, I don't know, you know, it could be the fact that I wrote and put pictures about breaking my foot. I don't know, you know, I don't know how the algorithms work, but I do know an awful lot of people who have noticed that they've talked about or written about something, and suddenly ads are being targeted to them about what they're talking about. So make no mistake, there is no private anything on social media. But one of the challenges, that one that started on with one man doing it on Facebook, and it carried over to become a challenge where, and between the first of the year and now, 7 million people have joined TikTok. So think about the kids, think about the adults, think of all the people that were members of this particular organization before social media, before, and how many more have been added just since the first of the year that are being exposed to this crap. I don't know what else they do on there, but challenges is a part of what they do, and millions of people watch each of these. I'm going to talk to you about, I'll just do a few of them, but the one called the Milk Crate Challenge was one, the one that started on Facebook and moved over to be a challenge on TikTok. And it was basically just stacking milk crates as high as people could get them stacked, and then doing TikTok, again, the parent company is called ByteDance, and there was some dancing videos that were going on in the beginning, and so people were doing a variety of things on these milk crates, from trying to, you know, stand on one foot and like a yoga pose, to dancing, to trying to do a calisthenic, to trying to do all kinds of things, but on really highly stacked milk crates. And what happened was pretty predictable. People fell off the milk crates. And, you know, to keep the milk crates even, people were stacking them on, yep, you guessed it, concrete. So when they fell, one too many participants took a trip to the hospital, it says, TikTok began deleting milk crate challenge videos. But I'm not so sure. I mean, somebody who's on TikTok should look and see if there are still any milk crate challenge videos on there. But whether there are or whether they aren't, they went on. And one that is popular right now is called the Blackout Challenge. And one 10-year-old girl, another 10-year-old girl, 12-year-old girl died. And I'm sure others, this article I was reading just cited, again, this is out of, what did I say? New York Post. So anyway, deaths of 10-year-olds, needless deaths of 10-year-olds for doing this blackout challenge. And basically, it's holding your breath. And it can be either just holding your breath until you pass out, or you can breathe deep, really deep breaths, like 10 of them, and then stand up, hold your breath, and a friend from behind squeezes you, and it makes you pass out. Well, that, you know, that prevents oxygen from getting to your brain. And that's what a couple of these girls died from. People have died from this popular challenge, the blackout challenge. Very popular right now, holding the breath till they pass out. It says that one actually has been popular quite a while, and 82 children were fatally injured after trying that dare, like recently in the last 6 months or so. So there's a few deaths they know of and 82 children who died that they know of for doing that dare. And under that dare, the people who did it, you know, and made a video of doing these things got, I don't know what their equivalent of likes are or applause or affirmation is over on TikTok, but that's what they got. They got the attention they were seeking, but are not around to see it anymore. TikTok responds to blackout challenge has now taken efforts to prevent users from taking part in the trend. After searching for blackout challenge on the app, they are met with a message that says, quote, learn how to recognize harmful challenges and hoaxes. Well, you know, learning how to recognize harmful challenges and hoaxes is by logging on to TikTok. By their own advice, I'd say if you've got a kid, I would take a pass. I would help your kid take a pass. And there's going to be peer pressure for your kid to be on TikTok. Chances are they might sneak behind your back and get a TikTok account. But my advice would be to not encourage it, because there's a lot of really dangerous stuff on here. And when I get to another one, this one sounds innocent enough. The One Chip Challenge. This says made popular as a TikTok challenge, but this one was also on YouTube apparently. And this was a dare. Some are created by people and some are created by companies. This was a potato chip company called Pakui, P-A-Q-U-I, asking people to eat a single chip covered in hot sauce and pepper, and it has become concerning to parents. One parent said it's crazy, and he says, quote unquote, this is very poignant, a lot of kids follow their peers, even if they don't know the consequences. I don't know about other kids. Sometimes they dare you to do things, and that's the problem. I know my son. I believe he wouldn't do that. But who really knows? End quote. And what happens is the chip is made with Carolina Reapers and scorpion peppers. And according to Marshall Medical Doctor Brett Christensen, those two peppers have been rated as 2 million Scoville units, and jalapeno is somewhere around 5,000. So they are around 400 times hotter than a jalapeno. So what kind of symptoms could people experience from the challenge? Throughout your digestive tract, you may feel burning or pain, and it can be pretty severe. After a short time, cause abscesses, similar to a reaction like an asthmatic might have with bronchial spasms. They can have persistent vomiting and have the need for IV hydration or medications to stop the vomiting. So that's the reward of the innocent sounding One Chip Challenge. This says, this is the beginning of that article on New York Post, humanity has hit talk bottom. Created in 2016 as a portal for short humorous clips, TikTok has recently become synonymous with something far more sinister, viral internet challenges. pull up a video sharing app and you'll invariably see opportunistic bozos risking their reputations and even bodies on camera for social media clout, like if Snapchat was created by the Jackass guys. In the most notorious stunt recently, a TikToker wound up in the hospital after trying to style her hair with Gorilla Glue. This doesn't have to do with brain. I'll get to those. The milk crate was one, and I've got a few others that'll horrify you, but these are just some odd ones. It encouraged girls to wash their hair with crazy glue. Okay, so this gal does it and lives in the area of Mount Rushmore. After slathering her hair with crazy glue, she had to get it, her scalp, basically she had to get scalped, get it surgically repaired during a four-hour procedure to her head. This is the first one I ever heard about on the news, and it's apparently still really popular. It's called the Skullbreaker Challenge. That should tell you something right there. It depicts three friends, we use the term loosely, jumping next to each other as the bookending bud kicks the middle guy's feet out from under him. The action sends the person crashing to the ground, landing on their back, and hitting their head in the process. And they normally do that, again, when they're walking down a sidewalk or in an area that's concrete. And so there have been a number of injuries and deaths from people doing this. Again, they're just walking down the street and have made an arrangement that one is going to kick the feet out, kick the legs out of their friend walking with them. And that makes them fall. In Mexico, they did their own version of Skullbreaker and used a sweater instead of feet to trip people into falling face first into the concrete. Either way, that would be a head injury, whichever way you want to do it. But that is dangerous. And again, I'll repeat, one of the things I find even more disturbing than that, and I find that horribly disturbing, I would never want anyone to go through what I went through, or worse. So I find it horribly, horribly disturbing how many of these there are, and how many people are participating, but the fact that they're grooming millions of people to think that these things are funny, I find horrifying, and enough to have them banned. I don't know if there's anyone there or here who can tell me any redeeming feature of any of these things I'm talking about, or think it's funny. I'd love to hear. Doctors have unsurprisingly condemned the practice for the potential to cause serious and life-threatening injuries ranging from skull fracture to paralysis and death. The Benadryl challenge. This inflammatory challenge, which involves taking enough Benadryl to hallucinate and posting footage on the TikTok platform, resulted in the death of a 15-year-old Oklahoma girl last year. This, along with several other fatal and near-fatal incidents, prompted pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson and the FDA to issue PSAs warning teens not to abuse antihistamines. The latter warned taking higher than recommended doses of the common over-the-counter allergy medicine can lead to serious heart problems, seizures, coma, or even death. So basically, kids are ODing on camera to hallucinate in front of millions of people who think that's funny, and they're dying, causing brain injury as a result. This I thought was sick. It's
that's
a new
crazy.
One going around. I know. It's horrible. Here's one that really, well, I'm going to tell you a couple others that kids are doing, and then I'm going to throw in one that adults are doing that is going to blow you away. But this is a one that's recent, and this person apparently was on Dr. Phil bragging about it. It was called the Coronavirus Challenge. Boy, if the virus didn't scare you, these nutcases, attention seekers, have got to scare the hell out of you. But she was going around licking things in bathrooms, licking toilet seats, licking where you go to get your toilet paper, licking faucets. And she had the virus. So
that's
in effect,
criminal.
You know, I think this, yes, that's what I was going to say. And the fact that she was on Dr. Phil, I'm thinking that she should be in jail, one of those, if not brain injured, on her way to being, she should be in jail for that. She probably caused people to get the virus. Now, again, TikTok, I'm going to go on. The dry scoop challenge, the death-defying trend prompts participants to ingest a mound of undiluted supplemental energy powder. But it caused a 20-year-old gal to suffer a heart attack. I never thought something like this would ever happen to me, especially because I'm so young. I'm going to pause there for a minute and just say this, it's probably not this way with everyone, but I tried a Red Bull once, one Red Bull once. And it made my heart beat so fast, and I started sweating, that I either have a heart issue or there's something in there that isn't good for you, and maybe not on one, but if you're doing it in the dose that this thing, to ingest a mound of undiluted supplemental energy powder can cause you to have a heart attack. It does start racing your heart. That's what keeps you awake. And one of the problems with the police thought it was, I'm sorry, the EMTs and the police, because she was so young and didn't automatically think of a TikTok challenge as being the result, they didn't automatically think that she was having a heart attack. They thought she was having an anxiety attack. And so, you know, that is a viable, you know, think of any young person doing this, having a heart attack wouldn't be the first thing someone's mind would race to in an 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 15-year-old, 20-year-old, person, heart attack wouldn't be their first thought, and you can be lost while they're thinking it's an anxiety attack if you don't immediately cop to the fact that you did a challenge like this. And the dry scoop challenge and OD'd on energy powder supplement. Eating frozen honey. This had 90 million views. The viral trend, which began with simply hashtag frozen honey and now has 673 million views, involves filling a water bottle with honey and freezing it before consuming the golden concoction. And this was like she looked like she was about 12 or 13, and she put it in a container that looked like a penis. So talk about predators and the dangers on internet. That's for another day. But that was how she was consuming her honey. lot of possible dangers in that challenge right there. But despite millions of views, let's see, negative side effects, she was acting like everything was okay, and then all of a sudden she said, I've got to go. And the honey water, able to go to the bathroom with diarrhea and overall uneasiness. And in her experiment, she noted that she felt sick almost immediately after. I'm going to try to like it a lot, she said in the video, before downing a huge glop and declaring it not bad. But moments later, things took a turn. I do feel a bit sick now, she said, noting she was not going to eat it again. But she wound up having to go get her stomach pumped. Be right back. Got to get my stomach pumped. So anyway, she wound up having diarrhea, dehydration, and had to have her stomach pumped because it ballooned for whatever reason. That much honey would do that to you. That happened. And so I'm going to tell you the one about adults because we're about 20 minutes left in the show, and then just make a comment and I'll be quiet. This one I found particularly appalling because kids being susceptible to peer pressure, that was the topic of our show tonight. But I would like to think that grown-ups would know better. And it's a real, you know, something's a real problem when you're talking about these kind of numbers of people logging in and these kind of numbers of people being groomed to think this shit's funny and put comments to that effect and wind up crowning someone as an influencer that does these kind of things and lives through it, and the people who don't live through it are forgotten. You know, so before you're out there doing something that could kill you, once you're killed or disabled, they scatter like rats on a sinking ship, and you are no one then, except to the new people you're going to meet that aren't the kind of people that think this stuff is funny. Verbal abuse challenge. These were adults. This was mom and dad deciding for the camera, for viewership, for those numbers to get attention, that they were going to have a dress down to their kid, make up a reason to be mad at their kid. And they started yelling at their kid using words like the kid being a mistake and in some instances mentioning the word abort. And so it says, berate, abort, these moms and dads figuratively crapped on their kids by calling them out as mistakes and then sometimes mentioning the word abort. So the fact that parents, shame on you, are thinking this is funny, that's child abuse, and I think you should be in jail. If you're willing to be an attention seeker that would abuse your child in front of millions of people to be on tape that's going to be out there forever, it's bad enough a child would have to put up with this in the home, but publicly humiliating them is downright sick. So parents, I don't even know what they're doing with kids. That's sick. But if that's the way our society is turning, I would just encourage any of you to not go to TikTok, to get off TikTok and to not help perpetuate this, because every time you log on, you're helping perpetuate these things. There's a couple just stupid ones. This is what people are willing to do to be accepted and get attention. I'm just going to tell you one. This was a corn cob eating contest. I'll close it with a little lighter one because obviously I got real angry reading this stuff today. I see no redeeming factor. I'd love to know what it is. Anyway, they put corn cobs so that they could eat the most, be industrious, so that they could eat more corn cobs than anyone else, decided to put it on a drill bit. They put the cob over a drill bit. So guess what happened? They don't have teeth. And that's the end of what I have to say, but those are not all of, but quite a few of only 23 challenges that they picked out. But this is an ongoing part talk challenge. Oh, and I heard one on the news, excuse me, the night before last. And then last week, I heard these. That's why they weren't on the internet in the list. But one of them I heard on the news last week was one of the TikTok challenges was for a kid to go in and steal something from a high-end store. Now, as we see from a lot of videos on the news, people are loading their car with high-end stuff and not paying for it. But I don't think you want your child to be a thief or be taught those values or have people think they're funny or they're an influencer because they can walk into Bloomingdale's and steal. That isn't really what we think of, I think, when we're thinking of a quality life and values for our child to have. And the one I heard, it was either last night or the night before, I lose track, is one of the dares going on now is for a kid to punch their teacher. Punch a teacher is a challenge going on right now. So those are the kind of things you can expect. If you had never been on TikTok before like me, then these are probably really jaw-droppers for you. If you have been on TikTok before and you found that these things were funny, maybe after hearing on Brain Injury Radio a different context, instead of just flipping it on, watching the video and thinking it's funny, maybe now that you hear some consequences from people who have had brain injuries that were not fun and the effects of them for the rest of their lives, and you wouldn't want that for a loved one. It wouldn't be worth being funny or however many accolades you can get from nutcases out there on social media. So I'm done. I want to tell everybody to be careful. Be careful of what you're doing out there. Be careful of social media. Be careful of peer pressure. I'd like to say to every person out there, whether you got a disability, you don't, whether you're a kid, whether you're an adult, you're enough. You are enough. You don't need the validation from other people to be an adequate soul. And for what I got kicked off of Facebook for, I just want to tie it back to the very beginning what I said. If you don't think TikTok is doing this on purpose, look how quickly you get censored on somewhere like Facebook if you talk about politics, or if, like last night, I told six relatives they were in my thoughts and prayers and made some comments like that, and now I can't post. They catch it that fast. So if you don't think they know exactly what's going on and this could be stopped if they wanted it to be, you're wrong. So it's only the people participating in this that are perpetuating this, that are keeping it going, and you're the ones that can make it stop and find some other way to believe that you are of value and that it isn't great shakes, you know, to have people tell you that you're of value because you do stupid stuff, stupid, dangerous, risk-taking stuff. If that's what it takes to make you popular, those are losers that are telling you to do that. There's no winner. positive person, mentally healthy or stable person that would watch those kind of things that kill and damage children and think that it was funny or tell you that it was okay. And if you're one of those grown-ups doing it, check yourself. And if you're one of the kids, don't believe it. They're selling you a bill of goods. And they're making millions, millions, and millions of dollars at your expense. Thanks for listening. Karen, you got 10 minutes to wind it up, and otherwise I'll just say goodnight and God bless to everybody. Be safe out there. COVID still isn't over. I know people that have contracted it in the last couple weeks. Just be careful, that's all. And I appreciate you being here, and I will be back next Wednesday, and I appreciate Karen being here, and I'll let her wind things up. This was a
thanks a lot,
hard
Kim.
Topic. Thank you.
Yeah, we definitely have learned a lot diving into this one. You know, and I want to also say that while peer pressure can be difficult, it isn't always a bad thing. And I know we focused a lot about the negative side of peer pressure tonight and how that can influence people to do outlandish and crazy things. But positive peer pressure can be a really valuable part of learning on how to socialize and even growing as a person. And if you suspect that someone you know is struggling with negative peer pressure, encourage them to talk to you. You know, sometimes kids or teenagers, they may not want to talk to their parents about peer pressure. If that's the case, just don't take it personally, but you still need to have the conversation. Encourage them to talk about it with another trusted adult, maybe a teacher or a school counselor or their doctor or even a therapist. And that goes for adults too. It's not just limited to just kids. You know, when we think of peer pressure, I think that the common individual that hears the word peer pressure, they think of that related to just children. Peer pressure is the influence that's wielded by people within the same social group. Now, it doesn't mean the same social group of just kids. That means the same social group, period. Whether that's kids, adolescents, teens, adults, seniors, you know, and often peers are thought of as friends. But peers can be anyone, even if they're not your friends. They could be someone that's in a similar status as you. They can be people who are the same age, or maybe they have the same abilities, or maybe you share a social status. Maybe you're part of the same church or the same group or the same club. Maybe you're living in the same neighborhood. Maybe you go to the same school or the same university. Maybe you work at the same job. So it's not just about kids. And peer pressure, while it's commonly thought of in a negative light, sometimes it can be used to positively influence people as well. And learning about acceptable group norms can be a really positive part of learning how to live with yourself as an individual and learning how to socialize with other people. You know, when we think of signs of peer pressure we can look for, when we're looking at peer pressure effects, whether it's positive or negative, if we are looking, it can be really subtle or it can be really overt and obvious. And some forms of peer pressure can be really easier to spot than others. Being able to identify what that looks like, though, can really be helpful in being a really good friend or being a aware parent or relative or coworker. You know, some signs that someone may be experiencing peer pressure that isn't necessarily being a positive influence in their lives is they may start avoiding work or school or other social situations when they didn't do that before. They may be very image conscious. You may see changes in their behavior. They may express feeling like they don't fit in. They feel ostracized or like they're an outcast. You may see them having lower moods than normal. They may have trouble sleeping. They may be trying out new hair or clothing styles. You know, those that they didn't or weren't interested in before at all. You know, and there's different types of peer pressure. As human beings, we have a strong desire to want to be able to fit in. And those folks that are sensitive to being picked on, made fun of or ostracized, those are the folks you see more often that are eager to do the things their peers tell them to do. And you see that with adults as well as kids. And research has really drawn attention to the significant role of peers influencing pro-social behaviors as well. So when our peers endorse positive and altruistic behaviors, then people are more likely to engage in those behaviors even when their other peers are not watching. You know, and that's where positive peer pressure comes into play. And I know we have about 3 minutes left here, so I'm just going to highlight some of this for you. A few examples of positive peer pressure. I know we've covered a lot of negative examples, but let's cover some positive ones. Pushing a friend study harder so they can get better grades, or pushing a friend to get brave and ask for that promotion, or make efforts to ask for that raise. Maybe getting an after-school job and convincing friends to get a job too. Or starting on a project sooner rather than later, encouraging your coworkers not to wait till the last minute to get things turned in by the deadline. Saving money for a big purchase like a car or a home. And encouraging people in your social circles to do the same. Educating each other about the positive ways that you can handle your finances or budgeting. Other positive peer pressure is disapproving of bigoted jokes, racism, or gossiping. Discouraging illegal or risky behavior, like underage drinking or smoking.
Hey, Karen, just a minute. We can continue. I'm sorry, the clock isn't the same as it just gave me the 60-second. We can continue because it'll be on the tape. But we just want to thank everyone for being here tonight and I'll tell you good night and God bless. And we're going to go ahead and finish what Karen was saying. And then I had just a two-minute idea about some positive challenges because, you know, we were doing this peer and brain injury, so we were focusing on the negative about how peer pressure can lead to brain injury. I think it's good we mentioned some positive ways, but I was thinking of a different twist when Karen did that. So anyway, we're down to 10 seconds, so I just didn't want you to get cut off in the middle of a word. So in any case, tell everybody goodnight, and then the clock will be off and you can continue and it'll be, there we go. All right. Now we can continue. We're not on air any longer unless somebody is on the switchboard, but this will be on in its entirety in the show. Didn't mean to interrupt, but there's about a minute difference between our clock and the studio clock. OK, counting down and I start hearing that 90 seconds, 60 seconds, 10 seconds in my ear. So I just hate it if somebody gets cut off on a live show in the middle of a word. So do you know where you were to be able to keep going and finish?
Oh, I was just kind of highlighting, you know, I just want to finish on, you know, some positivity too. You know, I think it's important to define what peer pressure is, because there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of assumptions about it being only related to kids. And it's not.
Right.
It's influenced. We're all influenced by peer pressure. We're all influenced by societal pressures, by political pressures. Those are all of our peers. And, you know,
absolutely.
I just want to be able to just, you know, draw the focus how allowing yourself to be influenced by certain types of those influences from your peers or from society can actually benefit you in effective ways or ineffective ways. In some of those ways, you may end up with a brain injury. In some of those things you do, it may end up killing you or leaving you with permanent scars or paralysis or, you know, things you can't undo. So it's just really important to just be mindful of your choices, be mindful of the things that you're engaging in, the decisions you make, and just keeping yourself aware of the impact that peer pressure has, not just on yourself, but on others as well. And what kind of peer are you? Examine yourself. What kind of person are you acting like? What are you doing? What are you saying? What are you representing for your kids, for the neighborhood kids, for the people that you surround yourself with? What kind of impact are you making? And what are the benefits of being a individual who isn't necessarily always deviant? How can you have positive impacts? And some of those benefits of having a positive impact is giving advice. You know, friends can be a great support as we try out new things, explore new ideas, or need help to work through a really challenging problem, need help to work through a life-changing event, such as a traumatic brain injury. The other benefits are having encouragement. You know, our peers can push us to do new things, to push ourselves a little bit harder to accomplish, to not give up. Friendship and support are really important benefits of positive peer pressure, feeling supported by someone who just really accepts us for who we are, and that really can help boost your self-esteem. You can't be afraid to have new experiences. I don't think at all that's what Kim and I are saying. We're not saying don't have fun. We're not even saying don't take risks. We're just saying make informed choices about the risks that you're taking. And,
yeah,
you know, gain those new experiences and make those choices to enjoy your life. But sometimes we need a little shove to do something we really don't want to do but don't quite have the courage. But that doesn't mean a shove to do things that are dangerous that we can't recover from.
Right. You know, one of the things I was thinking of, but I thought it's kind of sad because people probably wouldn't get as many likes or as much validation on social media. But, you know, the difference between some of what's going on in leadership is what if somebody changed it up, that the challenges had to do with random acts of kindness. You know, probably no one would have the likes and the videos wouldn't get millions of watches, you know, but what if it was, you know, helping a little old lady carry her groceries to the car or opening the door for someone who needed help or having a letter campaign to send cards to someone. Maybe you check at an assisted living or a rehab place and maybe ask them, or a veterans home, and ask them maybe who would be a good person to direct some mail to that maybe doesn't get as many visitors or as much mail, and make that be a challenge or a contest, something that not only would show leadership out of the person doing it, but the people who did choose to participate in that would feel good about themselves. It would be cool if people could get as many likes for doing things like that, using their ingenuity to do positive, helpful, mindful, healthy things while they're racking up those experiences. But, you know, I fear the direction it's going right now, they wouldn't get as many likes, laughs, attention, affirmations as some of these other things. But I do believe this didn't even exist a few years ago, and that things can change. You know, people can step up and take a leadership role and say, you know, some of these things are really dangerous and not funny. I think it would be a good idea, and I'd like to throw a challenge out there and maybe put something positive and helpful. Just a thought, but you'd have to feel strong enough in yourself to understand you might not get as much attention initially. But I have a feeling, you know, when on film, if people were willing, the recipients of these things, when you saw what a difference that positive gesture made in someone's life, that it may actually catch on, making someone feel good who's been downtrodden or depressed or lonely, isolated, and somebody's thrown out a challenge that a lot of people have responded to make that person's life better, and to be able to see the results of that. I think that might take some time and some brave people, but I think that that might actually catch on eventually too. So, you know, we can be the leaders or not. But anyway, good comments and good thoughts, and I'm glad that we thank you for the suggestion of doing the show on peer pressure tonight. And it's true, you're absolutely right with the adults. Even that one challenge on social media, berating your child, I was so shocked to see that. You know, and there's some segment of grown-ups out there who find that funny. You know, I'm sure the kids didn't, but, you know, the parents thought it was funny. But also in other areas, like you talked about, politics, a lot of things off of social media. So everybody, you're right, everybody is subject to peer pressure, and it's easy to fall into it sometimes, but hopefully not something that's dangerous. Hopefully it's not something that breaks relationships that are meaningful, long-time relationships to you. Anyway, this is a good one. A lot of people talk about, I talked about the pie chart last time or the time before. I don't remember what it was. You know, the different percentages, I think maybe we did last time, I'm not sure, but it was just the pie chart when you look at the brain injury information about Awareness Month, it'll tell you about, and it's give or take a couple percent, but like 45% of brain injuries result from falls, and a certain amount from domestic abuse, a certain amount from car accidents and external force, and then it does that, but it doesn't ever specifically mention. And then I was talking to Karen because it said 19% were other. And I said, I wonder what other is. And when she brought up this topic, obviously this falls into all of those other categories that I just mentioned, the known ones, but can probably fall into to other too. For example, that hazing and drinking, you know, that you were talking about, if it didn't result in a fall, but like a poisoning or something like that, I think that would fall into other, but it's really something that isn't talked about a lot. We're used to hearing survivor stories and caregiver stories and things like that, and talking about various treatments and compensatory strategies, but never really the impact. We talk about advocating, but as far as multiples being involved, I don't know that in the 12 years I've been here we've ever talked about peer pressure, so thank you for the new idea. And I think those were a lot of good examples to get people thinking, like you said, at least checking ourselves, but particularly people with kids. And when I was reading how young kids are that are doing this, I mean, think about it. I don't know about you. You're younger than me, but they didn't even make cell phones when I was a kid, so the worst that you could do is get caught talking to your friend on a dial-up landline at midnight. You know, if your parent caught you, that was the worst thing you could get caught doing, you know. There wasn't any internet. There wasn't any cell phones. And, you know, these are new generations that are going through this for the first time and going to be bearing the first set of consequences that people are going to learn from in the future. And so I think it's a good thing that we talk about it so that people can be aware of it and know that when you laugh at something, it encourages people to do more of it. So do you really think it's funny? And the positive aspects right. of peer pressure to help give people the empowerment. Maybe they're feeling a little shy on their own, and the peer pressure can nudge them toward feeling empowered to try something new in their life that's productive. So thank you, Karen. I really appreciate your help in these shows. You're a great co-host.
Thank you so much. I do want to add a couple things, if I may, here at the end. Is that for those
sure.
of you that are in our listening audience, and Kim, you might be even interested in this as well. If there's a lot of us who aren't able to go back to working in a traditional work environment because of our injuries or limitations or disabilities, some of you
yeah.
who are out there listening even, or maybe you're trying to transition back from rehabilitation back into getting out in the community. Well, one way you can have a positive impact and certainly develop that positive peer impact is a couple sites I'd like to share with you. One is called volunteers.org, so volunteers.org, and that is a really great site. They've been around since 2011, and they have structured opportunities. And you can pick your own passion. You can pick the time you volunteer. You can pass on some of that positive peer impact to somebody else through different organizations in your area, even on a global front as well. Then there's another organization called PAPA.com. Now, this is where you can become what's called a PAPA pal. And that's where you can offer a hand to help a shoulder to lean on, or even be a listening ear for older adults and families with how and where they want to live at home. So you can actually, it's kind of like big brothers and big sisters, but for older adults. Mm-hmm. So if you have someone in your family that, or yourself even, or you have a teenager or someone that you want to be able to help guide them or help support them with making positive peer impact, this is a way you can get yourself out in the community on your own terms and make a difference in someone else's life as well. And just remember, stophazing.org if you need to report a hazing incident. And you, again, can do that anonymously. And with that, I bid you adieu. Much love, and thanks for listening.
All right. Good night, and thank you so much. And just because I do, and he is responsible for our network, I do want to make a disclaimer. Anything I ever say on Recovery Now, the Wednesday night show, is my opinion, not necessarily the opinion of my host, not the opinion of Brain Injury Radio Network, which is on 7 nights a week, helping people for the last 13 and a half years. And so, you know, if any company ever buys and takes umbrage with anything I have to say, cancel me. It's not the network. So on my show, the things that I say are my opinions. They don't necessarily belong to my co-hosts, my guests, or the network. So I'll make that disclaimer. And then I'll say the person responsible for Brain Injury Radio Network is Craig, and I'm just going to play Brain Injury Road, which is appropriate for Brain Injury Awareness Month, and I will see you next week with former professional boxer Ray Cagliani. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
wondered at the world, don't care enough. Got drugs being used, kids so confused. This is why their whole life all they've seen is abuse. We've got countries fighting countries, people killing people. When are we gonna stop and realize everybody's equal? I don't know. But as far as I can tell, the rich are getting rich while the poor are needing help. So dig right down deep inside of your soul and find the peace, love and happiness and shining like gold in your mind. So great, so you need to be, it's all you can, the best you can, and I know you can. Just sing with me now. I'm gonna keep on walking down my road. I know.